Welcome to What's With These Homies Talking About Weezer. I'm your host, Matt Abadaka, and you're in for a very special episode. Today, I'm joined by two amazing guests. You know them from their band Don't Stop or We'll Die and all sorts of other things. It's Michael Cassidy and Paul Rust.
Hey, buddy.
Wow.
We're the homies.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks for having us.
Yes, you guys are the homies talking today.
Yes, yeah. We're the homies talking about
our favorite W.
Oh, man, that's right. George Bush.
Yeah. Oh, wait, no. Our second favorite W.
Okay.
I forgot.
That's funny. I remember in the early aughties when you went to a Weezer concert and you flashed the W's with your hand. It was always a little like, I mean, Weezer, not the man in power.
And not West Side. And people thought you were saying West Side Story by Holy
Yes, yes. Yeah.
They thought I was really good.
Bernstein. Thanks for having us, man. This is awesome.
Yes, thank you guys for being
here.
Oh, please. The pleasure is all mine.
Well, I don't know about
that.
Might be all ours.
Yeah, we're not willing to give you all that pleasure.
Okay, well,
we want a little bit for ourselves.
Okay, so I guess, there's plenty to go around. usually on the show we talk about Weezer.
Yeah, the homies do.
Yeah. We usually have like a specific album to talk in full. We're not doing that today, but we're gonna talk about Weezer's like influence on your very lives as musicians, and I'll ask you to speak on that when the time comes.
Wonderful.
That's cool.
But I guess let's just jump right into becoming aware of them, because I'll say I was quite young when the first time I heard Weezer, but I can remember it specifically because I was in a car seat.
I thought you were gonna say in utero. So.
I was in utero. Yeah, there I had an earbud on my mom's belly button.
But in a car seat, that's awesome.
I was
man.
In a car seat.
What was it?
It was a minivan, and my mom was playing. My mom had the Blue Album. My mom's young, and she was playing the Blue Album in the car. She would play. I think I've said it on here a bunch. She would play that album. She would play The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill quite a bit when that came out. Those are two albums I remember specifically hearing. My mom's kind of cool.
Yeah.
And she does come up every episode. I talk about her all the time.
So it seems like you're doing a podcast about your mom.
Well, that's the thing, yeah. So you're like, okay, I hear you talking about Weezer, but you speak more about your mom the whole time.
You're like, my their fourth album, Mama Droid. I mean, Maladroit.
And I end, just so you know, when the show ends, I do say, now tuck me in, mommy.
How would we have to do that?
Yeah, you have to tuck me in.
Well, that's how we end every gig of ours. Yeah. So it's okay.
Every conversation.
Every text correspondence.
And so you as musicians, I know as like a comedy person, when I have a show, I call it a show, but musicians call it a gig.
Oh, a gig.
Oh, yeah.
Yes,
the gig culture.
Gig.
Yeah.
Even though I just said gig right there, I felt a little cringy.
I love it.
Yeah.
I think it's cool.
I said gig as a way to locate us for the listeners as a band so that they would go, oh, gig.
They're real music guys.
Yeah.
Well, I was like, my dad was and still is like Paul and I are both from Iowa, and my dad still lives in my family still lives in Iowa, and
mine too,
and Paul's does too. They all live in a big house together. They all sleep in the same big bed.
Yeah, what big bed do they have? Their
own nightcaps
engraved on the headboard. Yeah,
I feel like we've made this joke before that
multiple
our families
times.
Sleep in a big bed.
I mean, if you guys have that much in common, you might. I mean, look, that's a classic joke. You might as well go to it every time.
Oh, it always pays out.
Yeah.
Go to the gold. Play the hits. But he was and is like a gigging musician. So the term gig was like applied to hit, like when he would go play with big bands or on dance nights and stuff.
Okay.
Dad's out gigging.
That's cool, Mike. Actually, that's really cool. If you heard like your dad saying, "I'm going out for a gig,"
I'll say something else cool about my dad.
Give you a little taste of the music world.
It was hip. He's also like, I mean, he's a lifelong band director, so he's the coolest guy in the world to me. But you know, he's like, we're all Iowa dorks, all of us.
Did you, Matt? Sorry,
I'm from Southern California.
Not anymore, man.
Okay,
he just slid you west of the Mississippi or east of the Mississippi.
One thing I always used to get a kick out of, like in college, like anytime, like he would always kind of like palm me like a little bit of like street money, and he would always like it would be like a different slang where he's like, here's a little bread. Here's some dough.
Yeah.
Like, and then you'd start eating it and be like, no, Mike, come on.
Put a slice of cheese in between it.
Here's a little. He would never say cheddar. Scratch. He would say scratch.
Scratch is good.
Here's a little scratch.
Yeah.
He said street money once, and I was like, hell yeah, that's awesome. Some street money.
That's cool.
I was just walking around money.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
But yeah, gig, yeah, muses. Comedy people can use the word gig, but I guess it seems weird. Like, if somebody said that, it would be weird. Never mind.
Well, with improv people, it's like or touring, we're gonna go maybe. Play. Like, have we played?
Yeah.
And so I remember learning the terminology in college. Mike and I went to the same college. We went to the University of Iowa.
What the heck?
Oh my gosh, the history is deep. Came right on the heels of the summer 2000 songs of Weezer.
Whoa.
So I met Mike probably October.
Uh-huh.
So I was fully listening to the summer 2000 recordings of Weezer at the time.
Very nice.
Yeah. But,
so I've known
it was a fun era for Weezer.
Yeah. Oh, very, very
fun.
Those
were the good old days.
Oh, boy. So when,
Mad Cow.
Yes, Mad Cow. Yes, I've known Mike for 19 years, and I'm sure Weezer was very much already in the... our dialogue as college students, but yeah. I don't know how we got on that. Oh, was it that?
I was asking about the early days of you discovering. I think that's what I was asking. That's what I want to ask you. What was your Because I said my earliest memory of listening to Weezer was in the back of a car seat, in a car seat rather, in the back of a car, not sitting behind a car seat holding it.
Just in a car seat in the middle of the highway.
You know what though? We'll get to the Weezer in due time. Your story about how you. Your memory of listening to a song with your mom driving.
Yes.
In the Zodiac commentary, David Fincher says he chose the opening song in Zodiac where it's like that weird song.
Yes.
Like, why do people have to be unkind?
Yes.
And he said he chose that song because that was the song he remembers sitting in the backseat of his car while his mom drove around the Bay Area.
Yeah, that's wild.
And my earliest memory of hearing music was standing in the kitchen and the radio on top of our fridge is playing Uptown Girl by Billy Joel. And my mom was in the bathroom and screaming, it's on! It's on! So I do think there is some...
Yeah.
I wouldn't say primordial, but just some sort of like... You log on to the world when you're like, music and mommy and a good song all came together at the same time.
Yeah, that stays in your brain for some reason. Because I remember laughing in the back of a car, like in the back of my mom's car, listening to Holiday. Because when Pat would do the lower vocals, I would think that was funny. I would laugh when he was like, we will write a post.
Well, it's funny because it's like... I do think Weezer was one of those bands where it's like, hey, you can play them for the kids, and the kids like them too.
Yes.
Like, and when I say kids, I mean like infants and toddlers.
Yeah, it was innocuous. Like, it was like They Might Be Giants, G-rated stuff, kind of. But and the music is also playful, and it's not threatening music.
And I think the ooh-wee-oos, in a way.
Yes.
I'll sing...
more like goo-wee-goo-gaga.
Goo-goo-wee-wee-goo. Not to sound like a total cheese ball, but I sing Suzanne to my daughter night.
Yeah.
And I honestly think I'm like, there is something in the melodies that Rivers Cuomo creates that it can actually create a bridge that even the smallest child could hear a tone... or a melody and go like, oh, like I do see your head turn.
Yeah.
Like at certain, like during the when I met you, I was all alone. It's just like, ooh, what's dad singing over here?
Put some sauce on that.
Yeah. So there's something, I do think he taps into something.
In that song, I always, I connected to the phrasing of a girl always like caught my ear of that song. Like all I ever wanted of a girl was like, it wasn't from, you don't want it from her.
Yes.
It's like, I don't know, big part of why I think I like that song.
But it's basically
old-timey or something.
Also universal. Sort of like of a fantasy. It's like,
yes,
you're maybe all that I wanted of, I...
It's like the concept of a woman. This is all I wanted from the concept of a woman.
Yeah,
like, I love it. But they do a good job, especially then, they do a good job of getting that across in very few words. It's not very, the language is not very flowery.
No.
it's kind of pragmatic language.
Yeah,
know,
and
or
it's
something.
Silly.
Yeah,
it's, yeah, yeah. Which Matt liked.
I love. I look. Yeah. I love to laugh. I loved hearing a song that makes me laugh, even if it's not a funny song. I'm like that. No, that's no, that's funny.
I'm trying to think of songs that are straightforward, but have a line that I go like, "Oh, that's pretty good." I'll get back to you on that. But
yeah.
When was the first time you heard Weezer, Mike?
I think Undone was probably my introduction to them.
Okay,
I bet I think it was maybe the music video for Undone.
Yeah,
it was probably the first time that I heard their music. That's my I think
I saw it.
I don't remember a moment
for Buzzbin bands, and they were like going through the different bands that they were introducing, and for a moment you just heard
you saw a clip. Yeah,
yeah. And I the only thing I could hear was If You Want to Destroy My Sweater, but since you only have those few words to go by in the Buzzbin commercial, I thought it was If You Want to Know What Went On.
Ooh.
Even though the song's called The Sweater Song.
So you're hearing this and you're like, oh, I gotta find out what went on.
Either way, it's a good cliffhanger. I walk around high school like singing, or junior high, I guess, singing like, if you want to know what went on. But you saw the video and...
Yeah, I think that was the first song that I heard. And it was like definitely... I was raised by music teachers and I will confess that I had a bit of like... I think I was a little high on the horse of like, I don't know, music... sophistication or something.
Yeah, for sure.
And
especially
there were
the progeny of two music teachers.
Yeah, that you like, that it was like, oh, I want complicated music because that I want to feel smart and superior. And this is like my identity right now. And I'm like 16 years old and like, I need to feel control and power.
Yeah.
And because I'm helpless, as every teenager is, just like desperately helpless.
But I could play a Rush song.
But like, and I was like, I remember having a conversation with a friend where I was like, it's just a 3-chord song. Like, what's the, like, it was stupid. It's an indefensible position. It's it's like not, it was flawed logic then. And I need to make amends with all the people that I said that to.
Oh my gosh.
You
know,
you say that like it, I wasn't, when that song came out, I wasn't around people who were into music enough. Certainly grownups, my peers were like loved music and stuff. But Tim Kalpakis told me he was listening to the Blue Album. The Sloppy Boys guitarist, Tim Kalpakis, told me that. Remember he was telling us, he was like, oh, he was listening to the Blue Album with his dad, and he was so excited to share it with his dad, and his dad went, so power chords?
Yes.
And I your story makes me go, oh, that must have been a reaction people were having, not just to Weezer, but probably to Nirvana and stuff, just like, oh, that's where things are going now, it's... a little simpler and more direct, and that has to be, which ego-wise, is, kind of feel like you're attacked.
I think that's like a reaction to, like, the dad in that situation is having the same reaction of like, oh, I need to feel like my music is better or more music, more pure or something. But, like, you know, the Beatles had the same caliber of, it's not like the biggest bands in the world all have basic songs.
Hey, Quincy Jones said they're one of the worst musicians on the planet.
Yeah.
Well, he said a lot of crazy things in that same interview, I think.
I think we have to believe all of that is canon.
So I feel like there were only a couple of bands that busted through that little haze I was in. And Weezer was one of, I was like, oh, you know what? You can't deny that this is like... this song rules. Like there was a couple of songs that like, and over time, like, I don't know, Island in the Sun. There's like these songs that are like, oh, this is a relatively simple song and it rules. Like
it would be
flawed if they tried to complicate this further.
I haven't thought about that. Yeah.
Also Weezer is not like a basic band. Like there is complex musicality and stuff.
Yeah.
Not in every song.
No.
But there are songs, they choose their bat, like they take big swings at like more complex music and stuff. And like Ben Folds is like that a little bit too. Mm-hmm.
Well, you're making me think, oh, go ahead. Yeah.
That was just another band of like, oh, Ben Folds kind of busted me out of that or and Weezer and bands like that where I was also like I was also conflicted. Like I also loved Guns N' Roses, which is like antithetical
otherwise
to everything I just said.
Technically perfect music. Yeah.
But they're, you know, whatever. It's the same, it's the way I connect to Phish music, even though I'm not like a disciple of the discography of Phish. Like,
yes.
They're very talented guys. Like those, they're great musicians. So
yes.
Whatever, you can connect.
Well, the
on that
Weezer
level.
Thing that you're saying, like a little, I'm going to make the comparison. It's a little bit like when you were saying like, oh, they are musicians and they can make complicated arrangements, but they decide not to. I don't know if that's exactly, but it's a little like, it's what we love about Picasso or Van Gogh.
Yeah.
It's like they could, yeah, if they wanted to, paint a beautiful landscape.
I've compared them to, yeah, the Beatles several times, and so far no one has gotten mad at me about that. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, one of the greatest artists of the 20th century.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, it's just like, oh, it takes a genius sometimes to strip something down to the point where, like, oh, what people really like,
yeah,
are direct.
We're like, Let It Be is a very essentially basic song,
yeah,
like the structure of the song is not complicated, but what makes these bands relatable on a universal level is probably that level of like they keep it basic enough that it's accessible,
yes,
to everyone, and then they also have fun on a few songs to like satisfy the snobs or,
yes,
something.
Yes.
Or
like,
they're probably not thinking, yeah, about it in those terms at all. But
maybe.
Well, and I don't have like a music background. I played trumpet in middle school, but I don't like.
Woo, yeah, you do. You, yeah, got a music background.
I guess I have a. I'm as big of a musician as anybody, I guess. But I played trumpet in middle school.
Woo.
But yeah, woo. There's people just coming by.
Yeah, there's a trumpet handing you a trumpet.
Yeah.
You have to play it.
But I would be very, very bad at it because I was not good at it when I played. I had braces and I could not.
Oh,
I could,
yeah,
just could not do it.
That's rough.
But I don't know much about like making music. I don't know much about. I know like sort of a little bit about playing and like just hearing that. Like what could make a song more complicated than other songs. So like I've recognized that I do think that Rivers is a much better musician than one he allows himself to be, because he's quite good, I think.
Yeah.
And but because you've heard him, there's evidence of it. There's like actual evidence of him being an incredible musician. And then now, what people people are just kind of like, oh, he's just kind of not doing that thing we absolutely know he knows how to do.
Yeah,
yeah, because you hear these stories of how he, yeah, has like he track the history of music to find out. And that's partly why I think he ended up stripping stuff down, is because he realized, oh, the thing that has the most direct. I mean, it's interesting. He could have. It seemed like he went the Kurt Cobain route of like, hey, simple chords and melodic hooks are the thing that keep people on board. And that's my flavor I like.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Bruce Springsteen is probably has better ideas and better ideas to put out in the world, but I'm kind of like, oh man, but you don't write the songs that get me going.
Yeah, yeah. Like they're yeah, like there's no doubt that those are good too. Like
yes,
those
right,
are good. There's, and those will just be there. You can get to those whenever you want. But you want to rock out, baby. You want to jam.
Yeah, it's sort of like you can always have sushi when you want it. But there's always a cheeseburger.
Yeah, right, yeah. McDonald's is open everywhere all the time.
I feel like a lot of Weezer, maybe my perception is that they're like, I guess it's not just them, but they're very, God, what am I trying to articulate here? That they're about like youthful ideas.
Yes.
And as a youthful band ages, it becomes like a very curious like web of, it's like some things I think you just age and you're just not singing the high parts and stuff, like the
right,
like the songs don't have those fun like woo, like those fun, yeah, like doo-wop throwbacks that he,
yeah,
was putting into,
yeah,
the songs, and the vibe is just different. It just feels like older or something. And or I don't know what's going on these days, but the,
yeah,
but what was, I feel like there was a youthful, that was the whole thing, was like, we're young and we're going to sing about a sweater because like, we don't care.
Yeah.
And like, it's not, it wasn't like irreverent necessarily, but it was young. It felt young.
Yes.
Well, I'm curious, this sort of Venn diagram crossover of early 90s alt rock LA goofiness and early LA alt comedy goofiness, because I think there was some crossover. Yes. Like, I saw an Entertainment Weekly picture when the first Weezer album came out, and it was a picture of Matt, the whole band, but Matt Sharp was holding a shirt where he had handwritten, "I heart Janine Garofalo."
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, there's some crossover here between...
Absolutely. And like, I mean... Let's just also not forget that Maya Rudolph was in The Rentals.
That's right.
Like, that's right. Exactly the intersection of the Venn diagram.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
But and like Marilyn Rice Cub was in The Good Life video, I believe.
Yeah.
So
oh,
like,
yeah.
There's a big crossover for sure, and I think just because maybe Weezer was like young and popular, and like those people were just starting to cut their teeth, so they were around, and like, so there's, I wouldn't be surprised if all those people. We're best friends and saw each other every day.
Well, what a cool time to be living in LA. If you're living in LA in 93 and you're like, hey, I just went and saw Bob Odenkirk and David Cross do an underground comedy show. Why don't we go catch the Rentals down the street?
Yeah,
oh,
that'd be insane.
God. Sign me up.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah.
Better than Laurel Canyon in the 70s.
Oh yeah.
That's true. Like, bury that hippie shit.
Yeah. Flatten those hills.
But yeah, I guess it was the Buzzbin Weezer video, and then I think the... When I got a compact disc player, the first two CDs I got was Purple by Stone Temple Pilots.
Yeah, okay.
And the second was Weezer. But I opened the Weezer. It was a Christmas present. I opened the Weezer disc first. So in my mind, I go,
that's your first one.
I know I received the wrapped purple one first, but I opened the blue one first. So, listen to that, and then Pinkerpin? Is that the pronunciation?
Pinker Palms.
Pinker Palms.
Dinkerdoy.
Dinkerdoy.
Yeah.
Dinkerdoy came out, and after cross-country practice, I rushed to the local music station. That was our local music dealership, and then bought a Pinkerton and a brown paper bag and came home.
It was called the music station.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah,
I thought for a second you were like, oh, your radio station was the record store, because worked at a radio station.
Come buy these bootleg albums that we're not supposed to.
We recorded off of the radio.
Hey, there's only three songs on this.
My first two compact discs were Alapalooza by Weird Al and Use Your Illusion 2 by Guns N' Roses.
Those are, like, Mike, those two together, that's you, man.
That's so good. Mine are a weird...
Epic Songcraft meets Goofy Goofy, and the Goofy Goofy is Guns N' Roses, and the Epic Songcraft is Weird Al.
The two that I'm remembering that were CDs that I picked myself were... NSYNC's first CD.
Cool.
I think it's just
self-titled,
called
right?
Yeah, self-titled. And then also Enema of the State by Blink-182. And boy, was that a hard sell as an 8-year-old.
Hard sell to yourself or to your friends?
To my mom. I was like, I want this CD. It has songs that I like on it. Crying.
Yeah. Well, it does feel like Blink 182 existed because of some things that Weezer and Green Day had done during the time. They
absolutely
were the progeny of those bands.
All of my Venn diagram for the type of music I like is just a circle. Like, it is like
no two circles.
It's not even two. It's just like the one empty one. And I mean, I guess NSYNC empty doesn't fit in that. You know what though? But NSYNC can really play those power chords.
Well,
really, you ever see Lance Bass pick up a bass? He's great at it.
Well, I gotta say, like, when the late 90s became pop, and people were like, MTV's not playing videos anymore. They've abandoned alternative music. It didn't bum me out too much, because the thing that attracted me to, like, my two favorite bands were Weezer and Nirvana. The thing that I liked about them was that they had very catchy melodies.
Yes.
So it didn't matter to me if whether they I mean, I liked a distorted bass underneath some melodies. I would prefer that.
Mm-hmm.
But when they went away and Britney Spears is singing some sugary melodies, it's like, okay.
same thing, different recipe. You're like, ooh, a different sauce.
Yes, exactly.
The music video was also, that was so much more of the equation then, too. Like, for Weezer and Nirvana, they were like, the hits were hits because of the videos in a couple of cases where the video is like a big smash,
right?
And it makes the song a hit because everybody loves the video, or it's like people love the song and it's a cyclical thing. The video feeds sales or whatever. Yeah. And now I don't know. Maybe truly is possible that I'm just out of touch, but I don't think that's occurring for bands now, where it's like a video made. I guess OK Go had a big string of videos that were like, I remember hearing a lot about and watching those videos, but who are people watching videos?
I guess it's
videos
more
now?
Like when they're making them. If, but
Beyonce, I guess,
Beyonce
makes films.
Lemonade. Yeah. It's more like a full film experience rather than.
Yeah, but it's like you don't just enjoy it on a. Well, maybe people do. I don't know. Maybe your people are YouTube and music videos all the time. I watch movie trailers all the time, and maybe that's my version.
Yeah, I mean, because like there's
watching music
videos. There's a whole separate like part of YouTube that is just for music videos. Like, and they're like. Curated. They're like, oh, these are the top music videos, or you know, the most streamed music videos this week, and here's a playlist with those videos so you can see them. It's nuts. Like,
of new acts.
Of like, yeah, just like brand new ones. It's not like, yeah, it's not like the Buddy Holly video is like getting a bunch of returns you know, these days.
Yeah. Well, the Buddy Holly video, I remember, speaking of Nirvana, I remember you know, your friend's older brother is the coolest person in your life.
Yes.
But your friend's older brother's friend can sometimes be the coolest person in your life.
Yeah.
And he, like, the Buddy Holly video came on, and I was like, I love this song. I love this band. And he was like, it's a ripoff of In Bloom. They're doing the same thing about, like, that they're guys who are playing, like, 50, 60 sort of straight. You know, because the blue video was that they're on Ed Sullivan Show.
That's right.
Now it's Happy Days. And I was like, well, Happy Days is funnier. Yeah.
The Fonz.
You were right.
And then I remember watching Weezer perform on David Letterman the summer of 95. And Martin Mull was a guest that night. And Martin Mull said, oh, Weezer. My daughter loves Weezer. And I thought, well, Martin Mull's cool. And then I thought, and his daughter, super cool. And then when we moved out to Los Angeles and I met Armin Weitzman, he was friends with Martin Mull's daughter.
Whoa.
I was like, oh, yeah, we were all part of the, we were all over the country, but we were all digging on the same scene.
Yeah, yeah. That's, I love that.
Yeah, yeah.
I've seen them very recently, and like we'll get to like where they are now, but I still think they put on a very, very fun show. If you go see them now and you aren't necessarily like super into what they're doing right now, they're giving you your money's worth. I think they're putting on a crazy good show.
Good for them. Yeah. Yes, and as and fans love them, so people want to go and lose their minds.
That's what confuses me, is that like fans say that they love them, but it seems like they are very like, oh no, they're bad. Because I see a lot of like posts. I mean,
the fans are saying like that.
Yeah, the fans. Because I see a lot of like on like there's like a Weezer Reddit where people are like, these are the top albums or whatever, and some of them have been they've sort of flipped to like appreciating some of the newer stuff or whatever. But it's always very like. I feel like mean spirited, but also online is mean. There,
yeah.
And I
said it,
and I'm always saying how much I like to be. I'm classically logged on. I'm always online. I love being online.
Hey, you're on AOL right now. Get off of there.
Door closed. Let me put my away message to something. Emo.
Mom! Yeah, Mom, get off the AOL!
Get off the AOL! No, but like, people are just mean online because it's easy to be mean when nobody's holding you accountable.
Yeah.
But so Pinkerton comes out, and what is that experience like? Because I know, I got to Pinkerton late. It was not played in my car. The first song was about sex.
Uh-oh.
You're not playing that for kids.
Oh, baby.
When I first heard that song, I was a virgin, and I was like, I guess I get tired of masturbating. Like, I so wanted to, like, be in lockstep with Rivers Cuomo's emotional experience. I was like, I've been there. I get tired of jerking off alone. Which is, like, the complete reverse of what that song is. It's like, I can have intimacy with people, but I don't want it. For me, I'm like, I want intimacy with people, but I can't get it.
So, like, it was obviously received differently than it is regarded now. In that time, people were like, what is this? Because it was not as polished, and it was just such a completely different listening experience. Were you guys on board with that album when it came out? And don't be afraid to seem cool and say yes.
Well, I'm very reluctant to say this because this is maybe one of only two times in my life where I was ever in the position to be like, I loved it, man.
Okay,
I loved it so much. And I was sort of it, and all my friends loved it, and we'd listen to it. And like the night it came out, all my friends bought it, and we came to school the next day, and we were just raving about El Scorcho.
We were
just like, oh my God, that chorus. And I couldn't stop listening to it, and I was obsessed. And I even didn't, and it wasn't even me going, oh, this is so different from the Blue Album, but I still like it. I actually just thought it was a continuation of the Blue Album. Maybe it sounded a little noisier.
Yeah.
But I didn't see that much of a difference. I was like, the melodies are still sharp. They're still singing about personal stuff. I don't know. It didn't. And so when the lore kind of grew and people were like, oh, people didn't like it, it honestly surprised me.
Yeah.
Because I was like, how can you deny
It'd be weird to hear that people were like, you know, when Rumors came out, people hated it. Like, it'd be so crazy. Because, I mean, not that they're one-to-one. But, like, you know what I mean? Like, they're just their biggest work being, I guess, hated upon release.
Yeah.
Because I've even on the deluxe edition of Pinkerton, where it has like radio interviews from that time, people are calling in and being like, why did you do that? like asking them point blank, why did they make a shitty like album?
I think what it is Rivers Cuomo actively didn't want the videos to be goofy.
Yes.
Like, he was like, these are serious songs. They're written from a personal place, and I don't want them to become Buddy Holly eyes.
Yes.
And I think that's the only mistake that was really made in all that. I think if they had just made some goofy videos for their Pinkerton songs, it would have gone down a little easier. I think it was too much of a hat on a hat. They were asking you a lot, maybe production wise, and then also asking you a lot, like, and we're not doing goofy videos anymore.
Yeah.
And that's the whatever. A band about youthfulness growing up a little bit has growing pains, and it's like, this music is real and it's about something that's real to me, and I need you to like just like take us seriously for a second. And it did have that. I do remember it kind of having an air of it like that. I had a similar experience where people listened to it and it was like back, like it was like on, I remember SNL was like that at the time too, where it was like we would go to Sunday school and like talk about SNL and like the sketches. And I remember the album coming out and like, and The Good Life was like that's a big Weezer song for me.
Yes.
That was a big step in me. Like that brought me one big step closer to Weezer, I think. But I don't know that it lost some youthfulness because, you know, there's a little more ego at play and being goofy. I get it too. It's also like, that's a legit request. Like, I don't want to be seen as a silly guy. That's totally fair, man.
Yeah.
You're a grown man. You're a rock star guy now. Yeah. And you fucking want people to take you seriously. I get it.
But it's interesting because it wasn't, I didn't, the Ben Folds thing is an interesting comparison, which is like, I like those first Ben Folds 5 and Weezer's first albums individually because they had some humor.
Uh-huh.
But the thing that I most gravitated toward was some sort of emotional.
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
So when the next album was more of that, I was like, oh, thank God, more. That's what I want. And so for maybe people who were like, I think of them as the presidents of the United States of America, and I like Lump, and now they're singing about a fan who's obsessed with him and they want to fuck him. That's weird. But for Weezer, I was like, they were already emotional and confessional, and Ben Folds 5 was already that way. So,
and also, that is weird.
It's what we talk about with like 70s filmmakers. Like, what's so fun about watching them is like, they had no guard either studio wise or friends wise going like, hey, maybe you should turn down, kind of, you don't have to talk about that right now.
Yeah.
That's what I like about Bigger Dinner. Like, nobody told them to keep that to himself.
Yeah. Well, and that's probably because, I mean, they did produce that album themselves, but I don't know if Rick would have, if Rick was in the room for that, would have been like, maybe not. He would have been like, turn that up, baby. Go for it.
Yeah. Frick Ocasek was like, we don't need that like little piano part before I cross the sea.
Yeah, no, keep saying weird stuff.
Yeah. And the Rick Ocasek stuff is just like, it's interesting to see how, what bands he started producing after Weezer, like some Not a Surf and stuff. And
he's really interesting to me, just because like he somehow just knows exactly like what buttons to press to get good stuff out of those guys.
Yeah.
Like, and that's, you know, he's just a good, he's good at his job. He's good at music himself. And also is just like, I know how to produce. So I'm going to produce you in the direction that you, in my opinion, sound the best.
Yeah.
Cause like, I mean, he did Green and he did Everything Will Be All Right in the End, which is like top to bottom, very, very good.
That's true. I'm not knowledgeable enough. Is there any sort of acrimony between Rivers Cuomo and Rick Ocasek? Do they not work together every time?
Because... I don't think so. Like, I think they, because they called him in for Green to be like, hey, we need a little help. Like, we need a little bit of a comeback. Uh-huh. So they got him on board for that. And then, yeah, they hadn't worked together since then up into 2010. And that's almost... That's over 10 years.
Yeah.
And so I think it was just sort of like, hey, like we could use another slam dunk, I think.
Uh-huh.
Because that, even on that album where they do sound, because it has, it goes back to that sweet, sweet crunch. They get all those crunchy guitars on there, like really good melodies, very interesting songs on it too. But they also push forward. I mean, we haven't talked about that album yet on this show, but there's a 3-part song on that album called the Futurescope Trilogy, which is like the coolest thing they've ever done, I think. It just fucking rules.
Oh, that's awesome.
Because like 2 of the tracks are instrumental and it has like 5 guitars on it. It's crazy.
Rad.
And I saw them do it one time at a show in support of that album. And I was just like, this is insane. And then I, you know, got on a real high horse and was like, they're good and you're all wrong.
It's funny, like, that, what you're sort of saying about fans having to debate about what the...
Yeah.
Like, it almost mirrors exactly, like, Episode 1 came out in 1999.
Yes.
And the Green album, I think, came out in 2001, right before, like, a year before Attack of the Clones.
Yes.
And I feel like... Gosh. Nick Weiger once, I was at a party once, and everybody started shit-talking the prequels. And Nick Weiger said, I spent more time talking about how I hate the prequels more than anything, and certainly more than my love about Star Wars that I liked. And it's a weird, like, there's a Star Wars shirt in the Say It Ain't So video.
Yeah.
Like, so I do think there's a connection where when... people complain about Weezer's downfall in the same way that they kind of have this weird connection to Star Wars.
Is the connection maybe just if I have a theory that if the internet wasn't happening when the Star Wars prequels came out, nobody would say anything about it. Like, nobody would like sit and type about an opinion about it. They would have just watched a movie and been like, no, it's fine.
Well, yeah, Weezer, I mean, Weezer shouldn't have let Jar Jar Binks produced the album.
Well, that's the thing. He said, Misa gonna produce.
And
he
then,
licked the soundboard.
Then the guy running the studio was the big fat one that went,
I wish I knew his name.
Boss Nass.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I heard, very Jar Jar was a mess there. Like, you'd walk into his control room and there'd be apples all over.
Just apple cores and him strung out on the ground on apples. But going back, backtracking a little bit, I don't know what the term is, sloppy sound of Pinkerton.
Yeah, like unproduced.
Raw or something was badass. That was one of the best parts about it.
Yeah.
And that people connect, that people set their sights on that when they were complaining about it was like, oh, well, we just have a fundamental disagreement thing. Because you're saying that you don't like the thing that I like. It's not, I'm not going to try to convince you that the songs are good now because... now I know you're dumb.
Like, no, even still, like,
I get that too, like wanting to have a polished sound, because Weezer is, there was something kind of, there's surgical precision to certain albums.
Yes.
So I get that if that's the part of it that you connect to, you'd miss it. But
yeah, because like listening to the Blue album, like top to bottom, as I do often, it's hard to pick out a single thing on that album that is wrong.
Yeah,
like, you know what I mean?
Very,
you'd
yeah,
be
precise.
Hard-pressed to find something incorrect about it.
Yes. It's been nipped and tucked and like very produced.
Yeah, so nobody would want to follow up something that's so precise.
Yeah.
Especially something that's a little more raw.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be like, hey, criticize my entire personality. Like, go for it. It's all on this album. Go for it. That'd be horrifying.
But you know what's interesting? I feel like Rivers Cuomo's, I don't know the man, but to his takeaway...
He dropped you off over here, I thought.
Yeah. He kissed me and Mike on the lips. Yeah.
Have a good record, sweeties. Thanks, Rivers.
Do you want to come? No, absolutely not.
Like the Taupe album, or what's it called?
Teal.
Yes.
They'll do Taupe.
Taupe album is great.
Yeah.
Put some good words in for the Teal album, then. No, what was I saying about old Rivers? I forget.
You don't know him personally, but the takeaway, something about a takeaway.
Oh, yeah. That his takeaway about Pinkerton seems to be like, I was too confessional.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. But what we seem to be saying right now is maybe people were just more like thrown off by the production. And if I had to hazard a guess, people probably have a more... a strong response to how something sounds rather than the content of the lyrics.
Yeah, I think so.
I definitely absorb music in that.
Yeah.
I absorb like words and like right brain ideas or left brain ideas. Like the logic of a song comes after you, like you have a, like a visceral, physical response
to a
song.
I always hear the music first. Like, then I'm like, oh, what are these lyrics? And I'm like, oh, those lyrics are fine.
Yeah.
Or like, oh, those are fun lyrics. I'm going to make sure I commit those to memory and sing along.
So if El Scorcho had been produced with like some Blue album sort of shine, then I don't think the takeaway would have been like, oh, I confess too much.
Yes.
People would have been like, oh, it sounds
this
like
is great.
It's more Buddy Holly.
But it is very interesting because, like, I mean, I even just listening to Pinkerton now, I don't know if some of the things he sings about, some of the context they're talking about, doesn't necessarily hit me in the same way that it did when I was like a teenager that was like experiencing the things he's talking about or whatever. Mm-hmm. But the musical elements of that album, like, just still like punch so hard, and you're always just like, oh yeah, like the. Just the beginning notes of, or, you know, the beginning squeals of Get You, or, Tired of Sex, even. It's just, like, so, like...
Or that
just,
solo of Get You is
yes.
so good.
Yes! It's just, I just feel that, like, in my entire body. I'm just like, oh, yeah!
Yeah. And I don't know, I've never, you know, and I don't want to veer into who they were in those two albums.
Sure.
They were in but like, I do have the most visceral experience I have is to Pinkerton. You know, what you're sort of describing is like that experience. And then with Blue Album, it's probably more of like a nostalgic sort of fondness, like it's a pleasant experience to listen to it. Whereas Pinkerton is a little bit more.
Yeah. That's like a comfort food album. The Blue album a little bit more, maybe.
I remember my heart broke in like 2004 when I listened to the Blue album, and I was like, oh, the production sounds dated. It was the first time I had 10 years away from it. Not I listened to it all of those 10 years, but it was just the first time we were like, oh, this doesn't sound like what's on the radio anymore. And we've talked about it before, like sometimes what makes a album sound dated or not is how the drums are recorded, really.
Yeah.
And so I think the reason for me Pinkerton always sounds sort of alive and new is because it does sound raw, what people would call raw.
Yeah. It's like a less processed drum sound.
But I was part of you could join the Weezer fan club, and I joined that, and they sent me the lyrics to Pinkerton in the mail.
Uh-huh.
And then I got a little card with my face on it, and then I got a tape sent of people who were in the Weezer fan club band recording covers of Weezer songs.
Wow.
And who got to be in the Weezer fan club band? Like, was that, did you audition and like, or is it just like some guy, some...
Yeah, that's so interesting.
Well, you had to be a fan club member first. So you'd like, and then after you were already accepted that, then your garage band could send in a cover. And they were awesome. And then, I'll try to find the tape because or I'm sure it exists somewhere online, but like the, this one cool guy did a cover of Say It Ain't So with Where Is My Mind.
Oh,
he like combined the two. He found a way to cover
both.
That's
such a great idea. Yeah. So then you would get a tape that's like a compilation of fan covers.
Who are all like that's people amazing. Your age and you're listening
that's
to them.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, that's cool. So cool.
That. Yeah.
I recently joined the Weezer fan club and my stuff hasn't come.
Where's my tape?
Hey,
Cuomo.
Carl, where's my stuff?
I'm doing a whole podcast spreading the word. And,
I'm spreading the good word, my dear boy. I'm going door to door. So, I mean, obviously, there's reverence for Blue and Pinkerton. So I have to ask, how much further did you guys go?
I mean... Not much further. Like, by the time we get to the break or whatever, the like 98 to 2000, the little whatever.
Green came out in 2001, before 9/11.
The
not right before, but
the night before.
Yeah, it came out September 10th.
They were blasting.
I had made a note in when I recorded the show. I made a note that it was the last pre 9/11 Weezer album because, like, maybe that has some sort of context to
That's true. Maybe Make Believe was really trying to grapple with.
Make Believe's a Bush album. It's a Bush attack album. Is what it is.
And Maladroit was next.
Yes,
Green album, and then Maladroit.
Yeah, because I was definitely still on the hook. Then.
Yeah. Me too.
And that probably was the last one that I would like actually, I think that's definitely the last one that I purchased. I think. I'm trying to think what.
Be careful what you say next because this is going straight to the police.
Weezer police?
Yeah. Well, no, Sting and the gang.
And the gang. I know because the next self-titled one would have been the
after Green, it would have been Red.
Red, yeah. And I definitely wasn't on board at Red. I wasn't.
Yeah. So
I
was, after Maladroit, it's Make Believe, Red, then Ratitude, then Hurley, then Death to False Metal, then Everything Will Be All Right in the End. Then White, then Pacific Daydream, then then Teal, then Black in the same year.
This year.
Yeah, what a worthless superpower I have. Ask me any math question. Ask me
Weezer's discography.
I got
lighter
it.
Notes.
Yeah, I mean, oh boy, could I go further and go track by track? No, absolutely not. That's honestly a little further than most people. Most people would be like, after Pinkerton, I lost it, and that's also. I've been given that opinion a lot of grief. That's also very fine.
It's valid.
It's valid, because it's obviously if Green, Green is a sort of more polished Blue, like in a negative way.
Yes,
like it's like too much.
Yeah,
that's their.
Yeah, I agree.
Speaking of turning green, I'm going to turn green if I don't pee.
Okay, go. We'll take a break and we'll be right back.
Oh, remember my funny joke about how I was turning green?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, I'm not green anymore.
And that means we're back. Have you like kept up with them at all? Like, I know you said you sort of fell off as being a fan at those points. Have you gone in and like listened to the albums that have come out in recent years? Have you heard any of these new songs?
Well, when Green Album came out, I did like that because I was following all the summer 2000 live recordings that I really loved, and some of them popped up in the Green Album and Maladroit, and that was just exciting because I was happy to hear these songs be produced.
Yeah.
But I remember maybe my... It came out in spring of 2001, Green Album?
Yeah.
My freshman year of college, and I remember I was sort of in a little bit denial where I was like, this is great.
Yes.
And I knew it wasn't exactly like that, but I wanted it to. And then this guy who I knew in college, Joe, he was like, the guitar solos are the melody lines, man. I was like, yeah, I know. Like, all it is he just does the melody. And you're like, man, then you listen to a solo on Get You or something, he just like takes it to like another planet.
Yes.
And I know when I listen to the Green Album, that's the thing. It's what everybody says. It's just the formula is so locked in tight. It's like first, chorus, solo of the melody line. It's just
safe.
So as much as I love the songs themselves, the production and sort of crafting of them wasn't my favorite. And then Maladroit came, and that was maybe even more disappointing because it was sort of them sort of being like, we're hard.
Yeah. Every song on that album has a guitar solo. Every single song on that album. It has 14 songs on it.
As a reaction to me, people like me.
To you specifically.
Yes. And I liked Slob a lot on there. That was one of my favorite. I liked, of those summer 2000 songs. And if you want us to come back and talk about those songs, we're happy to. I don't know if you already have, but
I haven't talked about those songs. I mean, I have them. I could easily play them instead. I have other, like, I have some questions I'd like to ask you, but we could also play those songs like right now.
Put on Your Sister.
Okay.
Do you know that song?
Yeah, I think I have that one here.
That one's really good.
Because Maladroit, that was, they released like studio recordings.
Yeah.
Like they leaked whatever on their website or something, right?
This is, yeah, this is cool.
Yeah.
It's a lot of these songs on this particular like sort of, you know, curated like fan release is like they're so good. Even Modern Dukes is one of my favorite songs to like think about in like air guitar too. It's just very dorky, but it's like that song fucking rips.
Yeah. And I like wonder if it's because when they're live recordings, it has the rawness of Pinkerton, so it helps me like it. And also just the song content is a little bit more vulnerable. That I think that's why I got my hopes up about Green Album, but Your Sister is a song, it's like, why am I so hung up on your sister? Why am I so hung up on your mom?
Yeah.
It's like, that's a really good song. It's about like a guy who's like started seeing a girl and then he's like, man, I think I like her sister more. I think I like her mom more.
Yeah, the whole family's got something going on.
But yeah, Modern Dukes is good though too, yeah.
Yeah, baby. That chug. Yeah, that's right. Just chugging along.
Metal.
Here comes Pat.
Metal influence. Oh, yeah.
Aw. So you better believe I put this on a Sketch Show pre-show music CD for UCB.
You gotta let people know your sketch group's cool.
Yeah, they gotta know. And sorry, I'm not playing the White Stripes. Except I would, too. They're good.
That section that we was just playing at the end sounded like that. Give me some money.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
But, like, I mean, this period of Weezer is very interesting to me and like not talked about and considered quite often because it is just like songs that just never came out, songs that just never saw the light of day. I mean, yeah, Hash Pipe's in here. There's a couple others that made it onto like Alone. But in like, yeah, Dope Nose and Slob are on.
That's right.
Maladroit.
Mad Cow. I don't know if that ever.
No, I don't think that one ever made it. But that one.
That's a good. It's a moody one.
I mean, just listen to that.
Let's listen to.
I love it.
Mad Cow with a K. K A D C O W.
I mean, I don't know. There's just like, I wish someone would like grab these guys, smack them around a little bit. But I don't even know because like, there's. I mean, I don't even mean that. I don't want any harm to befall my boys. But like, they are very good at doing a very specific thing, and I also understand the impulse to reject the thing that people are just like begging you to do.
Without a doubt.
Yes.
And that's, I think, like the fans' conundrum a little bit, which is like, you're like, I love, they've given me so much joy and I love them for it. So don't they have the right to do what they want to do? And also
take risks.
Yeah. And also a little bit when you really like somebody, this is more like filmmakers more than music for me, but like, if they do something when you initially see it, you kind of go like, oh, I don't know if that was my favorite thing.
Yeah.
You kind of have to go like, but wait, I liked what they made previously. They know more than I do. So maybe I need to kind of learn how to come around to this thing. And for whatever reason, I don't, with Weezer, have that like trust exactly where I go like.
No. Well, because it's not, I think it's easier to be a little more forgiving with movies for some reason, because it's not like Martin Scorsese is like making like Taxi Driver and then Trolls or something. you know what I mean? Like, it's not exactly like the drop off. The Scorsese drop off is not as bad.
Right. Right.
You're still like, that was actually at least interesting.
Yeah.
He was in Shark Tale. That would be the maybe one.
Yeah. Exactly.
A DreamWorks, which has probably used many Weezer songs to make Shrek.
They did
fuck
do.
A girl.
Oh yeah, well I do. In the sequel, Shrek fucks.
Shrek fucks one, Fiona.
She's my best friend, Fiona, and Shrek loves her. I think that's in Shrek. Right?
Shrek. Or what? I was like, oh well, actually, Shrek.
He's right here.
Donkey.
Mike Myers in a Shrek costume comes in and beats me up.
What you say about me? They covered I'm a Believer for Shrek 4, I think. Oof. They took over for Smash Mouth.
Cool.
God damn it.
But like, I want to ask you guys about, because you guys are musicians and you make music. Stop me if I'm incorrect so far.
So don't far. Stop.
Okay. Oh,
Or we'll die.
Oh yeah, I didn't know that. When talking about music with you guys, it is like a crank like situation. You have to keep doing it, or else you pass away. I say pass away. I take it very personally.
I thought you were gonna say when the whatever reason. Talking about different bands' experiences and stuff. We were on a tour recently with the Sloppy Boys.
Yes.
And we were with a couple guys who have been in bands who have toured frequently. And maybe on the fifth or sixth day, we were sort of talking like, maybe if we do these shirts, they'll sell better. And maybe we could do this. And I said to those guys, I was like, you know, you guys have been on the road for so long and you hear us talk, it sounds like you guys have probably have slept with 1,000 women and it's like being trapped in a van with 4 guys going, I think she likes it if you lick her clitoris. So I feel a little bit that with Weezer just sitting here and criticizing them. I'm like, they know what they're doing way more. But yes, we are musicians ourselves. Yes.
And so, like, would you say that, like, Weezer has played like a role in the way you guys approach making music, or like the types of music that you like to make?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't think it has ever been like a something that we talked about. Like, there was never a meeting where we're like, okay, the band's going to be like this band and this band, and it's going to have this and this. But I think just organically, Weezer has made its way into our songs in a very positive way. Like, I think that we wear that influence pretty brazenly. I think it's like there's a couple of songs that are very Weezer-y.
Yeah.
And it is a lot of what Paul was talking about earlier, kind of like the pop melody that works. Like, they excel at that. So it's like, even if we're not trying to do songs like Weezer, it's like, oh, we're kind of maybe aiming for the same thing that Weezer was aiming for in that regard.
Yeah.
Like hooks and like catchy melodies.
I also think, when you, anything anybody listens to between the ages of like 13 to 16 or 13 to 17, no matter what, is going to like get into your DNA in some way. And so you end up like up to the pronunciation of consonants and vowels sometimes, like, because of who you liked during that period that was popular when you were really into music. And so there's stuff like that. But, you know, I think like Mike and I, we're really going to pull the thread on this band, which we don't normally do.
You're going to destroy that sweater, buddy. Be careful.
Hopefully we don't destroy that sweater. Yeah. But the thing we talk about that's always like, the best spot we're in is when it has like the intensity of an anthem, but the actual sentiment is maybe slightly silly, and the incongruence of like you're putting so much pageantry to such a silly idea.
Yes.
I think is pretty Weezer-ish.
Yeah. The kind of the unwarranted.
Right. Excess.
unwarranted like glory.
Yes.
Of unwarranted something glory. That's like an unearned whatever.
I mean, that's what Sweater Song is Buddy Holly and stuff. It's taking like junk, literally like happy days and sweaters, and then like putting them up on a level of like, these should be worshiped as gods.
Yeah.
And so I think that, and then I remember hearing Rivers Cuomo in a interview talk about when he was coming up with melodies. He was like, I feel this warm sort of feeling all over my body when I come up with a melody. And I feel that when Mike and I come up with a melody, that's particularly tasty.
Yeah.
I'll feel like sort of a warm.
Start like hugging yourselves.
Yeah. I'm holding an iron up to his back.
Yeah, he tricks me.
This melody is good.
Yeah, he turns me around and he says, don't look back, but just start singing that new melody. And then I go, ooh, I look just like Buddy Holly. Like, ooh, this feels pretty warm.
Yeah. too hot.
But yeah, so that and like I got a perm for our camping trip basically has the Good Life breakdown that's been pointed out to us.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's maybe the most pointed example.
To the point that have we ever performed it where during the breakdown we start singing?
We should.
I gotta go back. Yeah.
That would be good like on a... like an out of town show that
surprise people who doesn't like a little
surprise.
I was gonna say was when Make Believe came out, that had Beverly Hills on it,
that's right,
and it was
track one.
Yes, it was the first album that came out when I moved to LA. Was the first Weezer album that came out since moving to LA.
Yeah,
and I was driving around with people listening to it, and somebody went, this sounds like a demo. I was like, oh, okay, maybe this isn't so good. I can't trust my gut. I have to listen to people who I hardly know. And then, right before it came out, Beverly Hills was sort of like maybe 3 weeks before that, like they put it out on the internet, right?
Yes.
So I'll try to say this as fast as possible, but when I first moved to LA, a girl I had known previously in Iowa who lived in Texas emailed me and said, I'm going to Sundance. Do you want to come and meet me there and watch some movies? And I said, oh, I don't have enough money. And then I told our friend Chris, and he was like, you idiot. I had a crush on her.
Yes.
He was like, she's asking you to go to Sundance to watch movies and hang out for a weekend. She wants to hang out with – she likes you.
Yeah.
And then she said, if you can't do Sundance, you're always welcome in Austin. Come down as – you know, whenever you want. And so I bought a ticket to Austin – and I went
Paul's
down.
Paul's glasses are fogging up right now. Yeah.
Your guys' is ours too.
Yeah.
You weren't even wearing glasses.
I'm wearing fog glasses now. No, I'm sorry.
You know, it was the classic thing of I land, I get picked up at the airport. I'm like, what's this weekend going to be? And the driving out of the airport, she's like, so my boyfriend. I'm like, oh. Okay. So then
that's a true reaction I just had.
So for the next 3 days, I'm trapped in Austin eating barbecue, making awkward conversation with this person who my friend tricked me into thinking this was leading. And I remember the last night, which is last nights are the worst.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Already been an unwelcomed guest who stayed too long. She was like, it was a Sunday night. It was I'm kind of tired. I'm just going to go to bed. It was like 9 o'clock. And she went to sleep. And then I was like, I heard the new Beverly Hills single. And I went over to her internet and I like put in headphones. And a not laid, very depressed and sad person sat on this little like rolly chair and listened to Beverly Hills. Like, what a disappointment.
Yeah, you're like, you can't even get a good, they didn't even have my back here.
I know. Yeah. Can't you give me like a new, like a undone part two here instead? But
re-undone.
I hope that didn't sound toxic.
No, like, not at all. Like, I think,
oh, she put me in the friend zone.
No,
dude.
That's like a very like that's like a relatable thing. Like that's like we all. I mean, I viscerally reacted to it because I was just like, oh yeah, like that's a scenario that we've all been in. Like that's like, it was good because it was true.
Yes. Well, we'll glance over at Cassidy and he'll have sunglasses on and his hands by his head like, ain't never happened to me.
Yeah. Nobody has a boyfriend when Cassidy's in town.
Even when they do.
when you guys are writing songs, I keep wanting to say making songs. But when you're, I mean, I guess there's part of that too, is that like what comes first usually? Do you guys think of like what's going to be like a funny song or what's going to, or like what's a good song? Not good. That's not the right word. But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel very rarely has it ever begun with like, here's a premise. Here's like a joke idea for a song. It's almost always birthed from, you know, we'll jam and just kind of find, you know, we'll kind of fall into grooves and then we build that into something. I think it more often than not the lyrics are a secondary, like the groove comes first, whatever the riff is or the core musical thing most of the time, and then it's like, oh, what sounds good on top of this,
right?
Like what's serving this music best. There have been a couple of times where we did lyrics first, though. I feel like, and Camping Trip I think was one where we did talk more about like the idea for the song existed earlier on than it was like, oh,
those two words together is funny.
I think they're I think a lot of the aiming for comedy, I feel like I don't think we're ever like shooting for it. It's just like, well, the right level of it leaks into the songs like uncontrollably. Like, it's like writing a serious song happens every once in a while, but it's like, I feel like we try to not nudge it. We just let it be its own thing or something. Yeah. Some of them are serious, some of them are jokes. I don't know.
Yeah. And if, whatever the vibe of the riff is, we come up with a, melody and sort of the lyrics that fit whatever that feeling of the music is.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, and then, like, writing-wise, we have kind of a strict rule of, like, you don't, whatever somebody sings, it's sort of, that's it. Like, yeah. There's no revising.
Okay, yeah.
There's no second drafts of Don't Stop songs. There are times where we, like, kind of cook them a little longer, meaning, yeah. like, talk through them a little longer and, like, syllabically work
yeah.
things out sometimes. But, yeah, the lion's share of the time, it's, like, what instinctually came out of your mouth is valuable yeah. somehow.
And even you can't change it.
Yeah.
yeah, yeah. Which I don't know if that's necessarily how Weezer operates, but the, but yeah, I'd say mostly it's that sort of anthemic rock is yeah. what we yeah. most like about Weezer.
No, I love yeah. that.
Torch well, songs.
What's your, I mean, I didn't ask you to come with this in mind, so if this takes you a second, like, take as much time as you need or whatever, but what are your guys' favorite Weezer songs?
Oh.
And when we talked to Suzanne, you'd say probably that one.
I like Suzanne a lot, and I taped Mallrats off of TV just so I could hear Suzanne in the end credits.
Yes.
There was no other way to hear it. But I like Suzanne a lot. I'm trying to think of...
I would say maybe, like, I think my favorites are all maybe they're slower... like down tempos, like they have a lot of song, like a lot of their like big hits too are like slow songs, which I'm not sure is, I mean, I don't know, maybe not more than other bands, but like Island in the Sun is a slow groove.
Yeah.
Yeah. When they,
I like those.
When they got sort of a pot smoke vibe on a man with it a little laid
yeah.
back. It's
oh,
nice. It's
yeah.
a good fit. Yeah. Yeah.
Got their SoCal vibe figured yeah. out.
yeah. I like on the. It's tough when they're the singles because you
yeah.
don't want to feel like a poser.
No.
But like Say It Ain't So just meant so much to me as a kid growing
yeah.
up. Listening to that song meant a lot. And then, and that was also an indication of like, you're already being confessional in these songs.
Right.
I don't care if you're being more confessional in Pinkerton.
I mean,
and then Why Bother is a really good song.
Yes.
That line, maybe we could even get maybe we could even get together. Maybe you could break my heart next summer is a killer line.
Yes.
Like being like, I know this relationship's going to end, but I'm going to just enjoy it for the fun it is. Is
yes.
Very,
and yeah, so part of the fun and energetic part about the pursuit is like it doesn't matter if it's going to fail at that
yeah.
moment. It's
yeah.
like, I'm going to have this experience even
yeah.
if it ends poorly.
Yeah. It's more so what in those first hunk of albums don't like I grapple with like like Pinkerton I'll go like no other one isn't my favorite of the album.
Yes.
And Pink Triangle isn't my favorite of the album, but like stood against any other band songs, they would like tower above any other.
Oh,
band
absolutely!
Songs. So it's more of like a weird thing of like I'm obsessed with these songs. Why wouldn't I be as obsessed with these songs?
Or yeah, something?
Yeah. But and then Holiday's pretty great. That the as far as that melody's pretty.
I
good.
Mean, just that just the thing that I think about with that song in particular is when they're like screaming heartbeat. That's
yeah.
so fun. That's
yeah.
just so fun to scream along yeah. to in your car, too.
Were you at the Weezer cover band called Weezer concerts that existed at the Birthday Boys house?
No, so I was like not around. Like,
I wish you could have been there, buddy.
I know, because it's something that I've heard about like just through like the grapevine and like just friends of mine that are like musicians also that also do comedy and just being like, ah, like that would have been my
yeah.
favorite thing.
Well, it was the best.
You would have loved it.
Yeah.
The Birthday Boys, somehow they did some branded tequila video spot.
Uh-huh.
So they got a bunch of free tequila.
Yeah.
And then like, they got the Weezer cover band that, like, any comedian would name Weezer. That's very funny. And then it was wild. Just free tequila being, like, poured out of a hose onto
yeah.
people.
It was, like, kind of a sponsored, like, a liquor-sponsored thing, too. That's the only time in my life that I've drank shots off of a ski.
Yeah.
yeah.
They had a long, like, promotional tequila ski.
That's
that,
so
like,
crazy.
You lined up, like, four shots,
and
it was,
the
like,
most
a weird spring break moment at Fredonia.
And I was in a relationship, so I wasn't going to be doing, but in the most wholesome way possible, everybody was really horned up.
Yeah.
And just like dancing and singing along to Weezer was like the best night in the world. Yeah.
That rules. the boys would love to hear that.
Yeah.
When people are wholesomely horned up, it's the best.
That's my favorite album is that live performance at that party.
But I did get to, I went and saw Weezer open for No Doubt.
Okay, yes.
And that was for the Pinkerton album. And they were in a weird period. I think they felt maybe probably like, oh, Pinkerton didn't sell well, so we're appreciative of our fans who are willing to come out and watch us open for No Doubt. They're not necessarily No Doubt fans. And it was so cool. At the end of their set, they were like, hey, we're just going to go over to the side of the stage. If you guys are Weezer fans, come on over.
Because they knew, like,
we're glad you're here. And I walked over. And I got to meet all of the band members, I think, except Brian Bell.
Uh-huh.
But had a really long conversation with Matt Sharp.
Whoa.
And he was super cool.
Yeah.
And then some dipshit came by, was like, can you sign my autograph? And I saw him, like, get disappointed because he was like, I just liked how we were all talking about music, guys.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then I got Rivers Cuomo's like autograph. And I said to him something that I don't think anybody's ever said before. I said to him, your music's been a lot to me. And I think I might have also said, has gotten me through some hard times.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
I think he also hasn't heard.
Yeah.
And
good that you said that to him.
Yeah. So he knows.
Yeah. Just so he knows.
You could see the relief on his face.
And then a girl came out and like pushed her boobs up.
Uh-huh.
And she was like, will you autograph these? And he went, these are the kind of autographs I like. And I was like,
oh my God.
Wait, you're sensi emo boy.
Oh, no.
You don't like boobs? You'd rather talk to me, right? So
that's crazy.
Yeah. It was a little bit of a, you're a hero. You know, you should have. Yeah.
I told this story one time where I met, I don't think I could say I officially met Rivers. I was on stage with Rivers and like was... It was at a Everything Will Be All Right in the End like record release thing at a record store in Long Beach called Fingerprints, which is a great record store. It's where I hail from, that area.
Oh, okay.
I got up on stage because they were asking people to come up on stage and like say these like spoken parts of this song that was brand new and like, does anybody know it? And it like, was like, I do. And like, so they had a couple of us up there. And so I was just back there the whole time. And he handed me like the thing and stuff and like didn't look at me or anybody. But right before that too, I had met Brian and I did tell a story here one time where it was like, I saw him. I was like, oh, he's just like here, like not doing anything yet. I should ask him to sign my album. And so I did do that. And he went, yeah, no problem. Just so you know, we are signing these again later. We're signing these later. So don't make me sign it twice.
Oh.
And I was like, so in my head canon, I was like, that's the funniest joke I've ever heard. That's so nice. He joked with me. He saw that I was a fan and joked with me, and it wasn't rude or mean.
Yeah, definitely.
That's cool.
I do hear Brian's the sweetheart, right?
Yeah. I met Matt actually at UCB.
Really?
Oh, cool.
Yeah, like within the last couple. He's very, very nice. He did... He did Bangarang and did like told monologues and did a couple songs and it's just was really, really cool and was not like I did go backstage like when I was a house manager working at the front desk and just being like, you mean so much to me. Like, thank you. And he was very, very sweet about it. Just like couldn't help it.
I wish I could. I know he's out and about here in LA. I'd
Have
to bump into a Matt Sharp some point.
Maybe he's... I hear a little rumbling outside. Maybe he's pulling up in his car.
His little distorted bass car?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you guys got me beat. I haven't met any of these jokers.
Sorry.
Soon, man. Soon.
I've only seen them live one time, and I think you were there probably.
At the 2010? When they covered when they did the Blue Album.
They did the Blue Album full, yeah.
Oh, so yeah,
great, I went to, wasn't it?
This was at the Universal Amphitheater, right?
Oh,
now
yes.
Harry Potter World.
Yeah.
A great venue shut down by well, capitalism, I guess.
Yeah. By wizards, I heard.
Well, by wizards.
They were all dressed in wizard capes when they performed and stuff, and I wondered why their guitars were broomsticks.
But, and he kept singing Beto Beto instead of Ooey Oo, because he knew the minions were also coming as well.
he could see the minion that's peeking up over the top of Universal.
And
he's been saying, I look just like Ron Weasley. What is this?
And I also work for Gru. He just knew all of it.
Oh my God, that would be fucking awesome if he sang that. It'd be like the old Bill and Ted stunt show at like Universal. That would be the caliber of performance.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I went to both nights of that show, and it was I went with a very good friend of mine for Pinkerton, because we had bonded over that album, and for the night before, Blue Album, took my mom.
Hey, nice. Full circle.
Full circle. Yeah, it was full very circle. Cool to get to do that.
And this time, this time, she sat in the car seat.
Yeah, that's right. I made her sit in the back.
With the sippy cup.
Son, I don't fit in hers. Get in the chair.
Drink your sangria.
We'll be home in 10 minutes. Yeah. That's okay.
I mean, guys, I could talk to you guys forever about this band.
Do it! And, okay,
all right, here we go.
Ding, ding, ding.
What do you think he meant when...
what is a bottle of Stevens?
Yeah. Now, did you guys get that when he said Heine, he wasn't talking about a butt, but Heineken's? I mean, obviously, we could go on and on.
I thought the same thing as I was driving up here. I'm like, I don't know how we'll end this because I could talk Weezer all day.
I'll probably will listen to them on the way home as I do. Zach Reno pointed out that I listen to other music, and he's probably correct. I do listen to other music. I love a lot of the bands we've also talked about.
Yeah. Are they what's the band that you like that's the least like Weezer?
That's tough because like
it's a weird question.
It would
be
like different genre. Well, the band that I like as much as Weezer is the Beastie Boys. I loved them.
Yeah.
And they're just big in my house because my mom's from New York. And so like I got this
Spike Jonze
exactly, and I'm a huge Spike Jonze fan.
Yeah.
I love him. So I would say them. But I mean, right now I'm a lot of the bands that I like are this like Jeff Rosenstock, like Chris Farron, who's done the show, like Tartago de Vespucci. They're all sort of like within the same, they all know each other. I like a very specific clique of musicians.
That's cool.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I'll probably listen to Weezer on the way home too.
Yeah, man. I listen to him on the way here.
Oh, wow. It
got me thirsty.
Me
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Well, that's all I want for people to do when they hear this show is go home and listen to Weezer. One, I'm sort of doing what, have you guys seen Us?
Yes.
I don't want to spoil Us. Okay, so since you guys have seen it, Hands Across America, but everyone has earphones on and they're listening to Weezer.
I'd like to think that as soon as this podcast is over, the person will hit pause or it'll end.
Yeah.
And then they'll just flip right over to their music service.
That's right.
Fire up their favorite Weezer song, man. How could you not?
I know each night you go to the Weezer Spotify and watch those numbers tick up, and you're like, I was probably that.
Yeah,
that was
and me. Well, I can't sleep otherwise. Yeah. I gotta see it tick up a little bit, and then I place my hands upon my cheek and fall gently to sleep.
But that would be like if you listen for an hour to a podcast about like pumpkin pie. If you didn't eat a slice of pumpkin pie after that, you'd be a psychotic.
You'd be a fucking lunatic. That'd be so crazy.
Sociopath.
Yeah. Because, like, even, I mean, just because we all know these guys too, but when I've listened to Doughboys, sometimes I'll be like, well, this is right here. I'm just going to eat this too.
I know. Got you craving.
Yeah. Especially when they're talking about that spicy chicky from Wendy's.
I ate Wendy's today, you guys.
Yeah.
On the way home from seeing Paul earlier. Right.
Oh, whoa.
Whenever I go to Los Feliz, I got to pop into that Vermont. Okay, give it up to the Vermont Wendy's in Los Angeles.
Yes. Easy to get into, scary to get out of.
Yeah.
If you go back out on the same street.
I think this is is pretty universal content that everyone in the world can
yeah,
enjoy.
Yeah, shout out to, you know what? Yeah, Vermont, maybe my second favorite street in all of Los Angeles as far as different things to do in food makeup. Number one, Hillhurst, baby!
your scope of Los Angeles is within like
2 miles.
Blocks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Don't get me started on Sunset Boulevard! guys, thank you so much for doing this. Is there anything you'd like to plug at this time? I know you guys, within the last, how long did Dazzle Me come out?
A few months ago. November.
Was out in November, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're Don't Stop or We'll Die, and we have albums and songs all over. What were you going to say?
Yeah, check out Dazzle Me is the most recent album. You can see us find us on Insta at Don't Stop or We'll Die. Any news about like upcoming local or touring shows happening?
That's right.
Or recordings, too? Might be some news about that.
And we have videos on YouTube, but I'd say on all of our albums, there's at least two or three songs that a Weezer fan probably could really hook into.
Yeah.
Yeah. Listen to Space Worm, maybe.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
And, you know, by design, some of the songs will thrill you and some will irritate you. but it's all part of the gumbo. Yes.
Yeah, but, I mean, if you're listening to Weezer in the present day, you're used to this feeling.
Yes, right.
Don't Stop or We'll Die's output is only rock solid, baby.
That's right, that's right.
We love
that's
it.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, yeah, thank you for having us. This was a great
thank
combo.
Thank you, Matt. A true pleasure. And you're such a joy, man.
Oh, please.
And you're the perfect person to host a Weezer podcast.
Thank you, guys. Truly. That's yes, very kind. Yes, that's very kind. Yes. I mean, look, I love talking about my boys. And even when they're doing things that are a little sneaky and tricky, I still am proud of them.
That's right. It's like when your kid gets in trouble at school, you're like, I still love the little scam.
I admire that. Or he turned that F into a B.
Yeah. Yeah, or like when your kid says like shit and they're just like, don't know that it's a swear. Like, I mean, it is funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it's like when Elliot and E.T. says penis breath and it makes the mom laugh.
That is the realest mom moment in any movie I've ever seen. It's incredible.
The other realest mom moment in E.T. is she's...
when he's dressed like the lady.
Mom? She's getting out of the house and Gertie's trying to get around her. She keeps like choosing one side or the other and the mom laughs because she doesn't know where her daughter's going to go out. That's
also pretty you little idiot. Just get out of the car. Well, this has been... What's with these homies talking? E.T.?
What? Yeah.
What's with these homies talking about Weezer? See you next week, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye.
If you'd like to support the show, you can go on iTunes and give us 5 stars and leave us a nice little review. We'd really appreciate that. If you'd like to support the show monetarily, you can go to anchor.fm/WWTHTA Weezer Pod/support. There's monthly contribution options if you'd like to help keep the lights on for the show, and all your support means a lot. Thank you so much.